Any particular plans for the session for today? Because it really is meant to be a reflection on the practice that you did yesterday. Sandra's saying she had some other commitments yesterday, but she has been practicing. And one of the things about these practices is that you can do them as you go about your daily routine, or maybe you can set aside some time to do it. The intention here this time was to set aside some time. I basically am curious what happened for people during the practice, but I have a hunch that if I just ask that question, it's going to take a little while to get the discussion going. So I see that Sudip is in the middle of typing something, if the colon means anything. My suggestion is, let's see. Oh, okay. Michael didn't receive an invitation to join, it says here. So he'll be joining us soon. Well, then maybe I will wait a couple of minutes, because what I was going to do was I was going to suggest we take a practice, we take a few minutes to practice, but if Michael joins and nobody's speaking up, it will confuse him. So let's start the other way, and perhaps I'm mistaken in thinking that people will have a hard time kind of starting out. What would you like to say? What doing the practice these yesterday or whenever you found time to give some concentrated time to it, and thinking of it as a kind of a reflection of what we were investigating throughout the quarter, what was there that struck you? Is there anything who'd like to say anything about that or enter anything in the chat room about that? That's that.
I've been very struck in spreading out the cells and spreading things out in space. The recognition that appearances point to or do not point to or not grounded in anything, any reality beyond their appearing that way. That appearances are as they appear and do not represent any founding reality beyond their appearance. That's been echoing.
So when you say that.
Appearances are as known, and they don't point to any founding truth
Right.
about the way things really are.
Right. Right. Okay, well, that's. I think a really central point and issue. When you say it's been echoing, I assume you mean it's kind of been having reverberations in your in as you go about your activity. Can you say something about that?
Yeah, recognizing that if I'm having any kind of afflictive or reactive emotion to how I'm seeing something, recognizing that how I'm seeing it doesn't point to any truth about the way it really is.
Yeah.
I just relax my reaction.
Okay. Is there some example you can think of that that would make that concrete?
Putting an interpretive spin on something that I'm annoyed about let's say what my wife is doing or saying, and recognizing that however I'm construing it, it really is that way when it's known that way, but that's not fundamentally or essentially really that way, and I don't have to contend with that reality because it's a perception or it's a way of knowing appearance.
Okay, that makes sense. I read something yesterday of Rinpoche's, and it's not published, but it's something we've been using here at Mangalam Centers as a reading for people, something we read from every day. And he said, basically what he said was this, but it struck me in relation to the program. He said, it's not surprising that we have all sorts of reactions about liking this or liking that, or wanting things to be a certain way, or emotional reactions and so on. He says that's just the nature of the self, and it's not surprising. He said the thing that is surprising or worth questioning, I guess you could say, is that we take them so seriously. You know, that we regard them as being the most fundamental thing about what's going on. And it strikes me that that's the that's related to what you're saying. You know, if you say appearance is appearance only, appearance doesn't point to anything more fundamental, then, you know, your reaction is also a kind of an appearance, and everything that shows up has a certain level of solidity, but no more. And if we choose to make it the reality of the situation, well, that's our choice. But we may find that we have a little more freedom to do it differently.
Yes, that speaks to it.
Yeah. So let's see. Sudaba is says here in the chat. She says she's quoting Longchenpa. Whatever is in appearance is alike in being an object, a mere flash of the senses. Whatever has manifested itself is alike in being a mind, a traceless, inspective cognition. Both are alike in their immediate presence. Mere fetters by affirmation and negation. And then she says, this course has cleared up, or is clearing up, that teaching or truth. Yeah, I think that really also, again, goes to the same idea, and the quote is really nice in saying it's when we affirm or negate it, that's when the problem starts. You know, that's when it becomes a fetter. That's when we bind ourselves by what we're doing. And I suppose that, you know, one of the things you could say about space as a domain. And after all, our whole practice this quarter has been focused on the space section in dynamics. One of the things you could say is that space invites freedom. You know, if things are not solid in the way we usually think that they are, if somehow they connect up to space in a very fundamental way, then they are not fetters. They don't bind us. And that seems to me what the Longchenpa quote is basing itself on. So a lot, you know, these various exercises, really all of them, and it seems to me in some sense, all of them are related to that. They're all based on working with experience in a way that undermines its substantiality. And maybe you have another way of thinking about it. That's just one way of summarizing or you know, putting into a single sentence or phrase what we're looking at. But let me just ask again, is there anything in the practices that you've been doing that points in that direction? You know, anything you found? So Hayward, that's basically, again, I'm simplifying and restating what you said, but that's basically what you were saying. Anybody else have anything to say along those lines, or any questions that come up?
A question.
Dudaba?
Once or twice I heard you say it's irrelevant that the source of what we is the object of the mind, whether it is material, like let's say a tree outside of my window I'm looking at, or whether it's the image in my mind that I close my eyes and visualize a tree, is irrelevant. Still is the thing is the mind stuff. But then can you expand on the difference of the two? The source absolutely is different. One, I can go outside and touch, and it seems it has substance. And the other one is so easy to just say, oh, of course, that's insubstantial. So, Jack, please decipher that a little bit.
Well, yeah, I think that's a really important point. Clearly, there's a difference, as you said. The tree that you imagine and the tree that's in your garden or on the sidewalk, whatever, they're different. And it would be silly to deny that difference. What the sameness about them is really, you could say, on the level of space. And in a certain sense, you know, when I say that those two are really, that it's irrelevant which one you're looking at, I'm thinking of it in terms of space, or you could say in terms of the underlying structure, let's say, of the field communique, okay? So, in other words, we find ourselves in a certain field, and in that field there is a truth that's being communicated, and that's the field communique. So, what's being communicated, the content of what's being communicated, is different. And that's like the difference between the tree that you imagine and the tree that you can walk up to and touch. There, you know, the content is absolutely different. But the structure of having a field and a communique that tells you what's going on in that field, that's the same. And and in that sense, and I think it's a very important sense, it's not just some little, you know, academic point. In that sense, you can say both of them relate to space. You know, both of them emerge out of a certain space. And one way of talking about that space is the field communique, you know, the field and what's communicated in that field. And so this notion that everything is appearance only, that's what Hayward was talking about, it applies in either case. And the freedom that focusing on space makes possible applies in either case. So does that help? I actually want to say more about that, but let me stop there. Does that help?
To be honest, Jack, no, it passes above my head.
Okay. Let's try again. And let me say what I wanted to say otherwise. One of the things that is, I think, really important about the freedom that space offers is that space is space, no matter whether it refers to the physical realm or what you might call the mental realm. So, you know, the space in which the tree outside your window appears is one kind of space. The space in which the tree that you imagine appears is another kind of space. But that notion that there are two kinds of space, that's true in terms of content. But it's not true in terms of structure. You know, it's the field communique is operating in either case. And so, you know, I was noticing in looking at the comments that people made and describing their experience with the exercises that mostly they related, and I'm oversimplifying here, but mostly they related to physical space, and that's very understandable. But the same process or the same structure applies. No matter what your experience is, it's always what's given in the field communique. It's always an appearance that rests on nothing more substantial than space, which is another way of saying that it's nothing more than an appearance. And the reason I think that that's important is that we make such a strong distinction between the objectively real world and my subjective reaction to it. And I think that in order to really kind of get the benefit of what the TSK vision is about, we need to find ways of challenging that distinction. And so, or let me stop there. We need to find ways of challenging that distinction. Because you could say what appears is something we think of as an objective reality, like the tree outside your window. Your reaction to it, which is you like the tree or you worry about whether it's healthy or you think about raking up the leaves or whatever it is, but you know, your reaction to it, and especially the kind of emotional content of that reaction, we assign that to the subjective realm. And the point really, in a sense, is that in the field communique, they're given together. And that means that if you can free yourself from this quality of affirmation or negation, which is in the quote from Longchenpa that Sudhi posted here, if you can free yourself from affirmation or negation, that freedom transforms the whole communique. And you know, it's a freedom then, it's not just a question of, oh, I have a better attitude toward the tree, you know, or I have a better attitude toward my responsibilities or commitments, or I'm not so caught up in emotions. That's all good. That's helpful. But it goes deeper than that. Our reaction and whatever it is that we're reacting to, they're all on that level of appearance. You know? And that's actually part, I think, of what is involved in, say, the exercise of expanding the whole. Okay, I'm going to stop there and give other people. Bruce has a question here in the chat room, which we can look at, but I want to give people a chance to respond to all of that or share something related. Anything people would like to say? Was that a comment? Okay, well, let's go take a look then. So here's a couple of things. So Bruce asked, is appearance only also an appearance? Well, sure. In fact, it's probably not even an appearance. You know, if you put it in words, it's just a kind of a formulation. But, so I don't know, if you put it in words, it's just a formulation and it doesn't really have anything much to add except that it points us toward a certain way of looking, which is what formulations and concepts are always good for. And that's very important. But it's certainly nothing more than an appearance and perhaps it's less. If you say, you know, the appearance of appearance only, is that only appearance? I don't know, we're kind of getting lost in words, but I think the answer is yes. Bruce, do you want to say any more about that? I'll let you, or you know, did I say anything relevant to what led to your question? Since you're typing, let me go ahead and take a look at what Michael says here. Okay. So yeah, for those of you who were looking on the website at what people posted about their experience, Sudhi gives this example of being at dinner with her daughter, and her daughter asks her or asks everybody at the table, you know, just sort of a conversational asking. It was something like, you know, guess what film I saw last night, And Sudhi said she knew. It wasn't a question of guessing. She just knew. And that was, you know, the people were quite surprised by that. And it seemed to be an example of a different kind of knowing. So the question comes, where does that knowing come from? You know, And you know, mind reading, which I think is the way you described it, Sudhi, is not necessarily the point of what we're doing, but the fact that that kind of experience is possible is interesting and seems to speak to what we're investigating. So now Michael says, Sudhiba's experience of knowing which film her daughter had seen seems like a strong example, it says here, of mental space. Not only was the experience mental, okay, let me back up there. Her experience of knowing which film her daughter had seen seems like a strong example of mental space. Not only was the experience mental, but the channel of communication was also not physical space. Okay, yeah, that's true. That's a good, so thanks for pointing that out. I mean, I'm trying to make this distinction between mental space and physical space as essentially space. And the question is kind of, you could say, what's the mode of appearing? What's the, you know, how does something get communicated? And Michael says, well, look, here's a great example of something being communicated that is not communicated in space. It reminds me of some things I've been hearing lately about physics, but, you know, you all know about entanglement and the notion that at the quantum level, communication doesn't take place through space. It takes place, it seems to take place in some other way. You know, we don't have to worry our heads about what that means, but it is just another suggestion that space must be something a little more fundamental than what we imagine it to be. So, Sandra, did you want to say something? Yeah, I have a question and would like to ask audio. Okay. Yeah, please, Sandra. Are you there? No, she's not. Okay, we'll wait for you to get your... I mean, you're welcome to ask a question. Right now, according to what I'm seeing on the screen, your headphone is off. It was on before, so I'm not sure. Okay, Bruce is coming back to the question he raised before, which is appearance only itself an appearance, right? And now he says, in response to my comment, I think I asked him was what I said relevant, and he said yes. Everything is appearance is a universal statement, but applied to itself, appearance only is also only an appearance. Okay, the appearance of appearance only. It seems to lead to negation, to contradiction or self-negation. This is where some of my inquiry yesterday left me, which seemed to me to be past mere negation or reductionism to a place of nothing to say. And he says he's sorry that if that's cryptic, he's trying to be concise. Well, I'm not sure if it's contradictory. If you say appearance only, I mean, maybe that's true, and it doesn't seem to concern you in a way. It's not as though you're saying, oh, there's a logical problem. You're just saying there's a kind of a truth that's more fundamental that you know the appearance of appearance. Seems to lead to some sort of more fundamental truth. But I would just say I don't think that it's necessarily, or I don't think at all it's a contradiction, because, you know, once you're at the level of appearance, if you say appearance only, you know, or the truth of appearance only is also only an appearance, that's not a negation. That's another way of saying the same thing, it seems to me. It's all at the level of appearance. There isn't any going beyond that. And the truth, you know, when you say, well, everything is appearance, and there isn't anything more substantial you can point to, and that's why we are free from our usual commitments, which is really where this seems to me to have some bite, to have some substance, you know, to really make an impact on how we live our lives. When you say all of that, once you reach that level, that freedom persists, you know. And if you wanted to go back, maybe this is more where you're headed. If you wanted to go back and say, well, now I know that the truth, the reality of things, is that they're appearance only. And in that sense, you want to assign more kind of a weightiness to appearance. That would be a problem. Because then you'd be saying, you know, appearance is this special kind of substance. It turns out that reality is just appearance. So what's real is appearance. No, appearance is also not real, right? Appearance is appearance. But that's kind of built in, it seems to me. Okay. Sandra's having a little trouble with the technology. But Sandra, you can, oh, I see, you don't want to type because you want to be listening and typing distracts you. Okay. maybe I should just shut up for a minute and let you type. Let's see. We'll figure it out. Or you can contact me in some other way. Okay, let's see.
Where this becomes fundamental in mm-hmm. some ways, recognition of the appearance or experience of myself knowing
mm-hmm.
that. That feels like a central place to move with it.
You know, I think that's right. I was just looking to see if there's something in the exercises that specifically points to that. I think the place it comes closest is this notion of expanding. You know, if you expand, not expand space, that was one of the options, but expanding the whole, which I've been working with lately and thinking about, and it seems important. And so if you say, well, what is the whole that you're expanding? Again, it's important that it's not just a physical whole. So, you know, if you look at the tree outside your window and there's a, you know, and you expand the whole, it could be that you expand, and one of you wrote about something like this in the post online. It could be that you expand that to the, you know, the field in which the tree is located and you know, on out to the planet and the galaxy and so on. And that's one way of doing the exercise, and that's very fruitful. You may find it very fruitful to do that. But another way of expanding it is to be aware of yourself as the one who's seeing the tree, right? And to expand that relationship. You know, it's not, you could say to expand your sense of self, and that would also be possible. You know, once you're in the expanding game, Once you're playing that role, there's all sorts of possibilities. But I think it's really important not to lose sight of the fact that any particular experience is an experience that's had by the one who's experiencing it. And that means that relationship is available to be expanded also. And that's another way of kind of cutting through this duality of self and object, or
it becomes the experience of duality.
It becomes the experience of duality.
Don't point to anything more fundamental than it undercuts duality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's right. The experience of duality is is part of the field communique, you could say. You know, I'm trying to put this back in the terms that we've been working with all quarter. You know, we are very committed to this duality of subject and object and self and world and so on. I've said that so many times that it sounds a little boring even to me, but nonetheless, we are tremendously committed to it, and it limits our possibilities, you know, because there's reality on the one hand and there's my reaction to it on the other, and maybe reality is not what I think it is, or maybe I can work with my reaction, but it seems like I kind of have to choose, you know, one or the other, and whichever one I turn away from, stays solid, you know, at least for the time that I'm considering it. But if you recognize that duality itself is an appearance, which is what Hayward was just saying, then it doesn't bind you. And, you know, if there's anything to be said about as a kind of a summary of what the TSK, this aspect certainly of the TSK vision is about, it's you know, freeing ourselves from all these things that claim to be the way things are, that claim to be solid. And because space doesn't commit itself, and it doesn't accept the validity of all those claims about being real or being solid, it offers the possibility of freedom. And the whole point of the kinds of exercises we've been doing and some of the discussion we've been having is that you find ways to question solidity, you know, and you do that by going towards space, by expanding space, by investigating the field communique. You do that in this whole range of ways, and none of it is supposed to lead you to a different, how can I say this the right way? You know, the point in each case is not so that you say, oh, I thought substance was real, but it turns out only to be space. You know, that's kind of accurate, but you want to be a little careful about what you say, because you don't want to wind up with some alternative reality at the end and say, oh, this is the one that's really real. The notion is that whatever presents itself as real is simply appearance, or is simply a presenting as real, or is simply the field communique. You know, it's not, this sounds like kind of a subtle distinction, but, you know, it kind of is, because you have to put it into words, and so the words are not well suited to this, because our words are all based on presupposing that something is real. So you have to use words in a way that they don't like to be used, and they kind of kick and scream a little bit, and so that's why it starts to sound, you know, subtle or sophisticated, but the point is not really exactly subtle or sophisticated. The point is just that you want to make this shift by letting go of the notion that it has to be a certain way, you know, that there is some answer. There isn't really an answer. There is the non-substantiality. I can't think of a better way of saying that right now. That's not very good. But there is the non-substantiality of every claim. You know, there is the appearance-only dimension to every claim. And if you can activate that way of seeing, you know, it has a transformative impact. So it's not just that you can, you know, you can walk away and say, oh, now I see things more clearly than the guy next to me, you know, on the bus. That's not the point. The point is, now there is a kind of a dimension of freedom which is available. So let's see, we have a couple of other comments here that I should look at. So, okay, Sandra did her typing. So, if I'm observing a highly emotional situation and try to keep myself from reacting, if I expand space visually within myself and expand the external visual, is this a misuse of the practice? If I expand space, then I'm expanding time and see that the situation is just a transition in time. Well, you know, certainly it's not a misuse of the practice. The possibilities that expanding introduces are, you know, they take us away from the commitment or the acceptance of a claim, which is what determines the reality of a situation. And the whole idea of expanding is that, it seems to me. So any way you find to expand it, you know, and you took it in the direction of time, so you see the situation is just a transition in time. That's helpful, you know. Well, if you find it helpful, you know, you don't. It's not as though you have to say to yourself, "Oh, maybe that's just a trick," or "maybe I'm misusing the practice." No, the moment that it opens things up, that in itself is helpful. So I was, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I was at a conference in India, and it was about. It was a Buddhist conference, but because it was in India and because there were people there from all over the world, there was quite a bit of discussion about the India and China and the kind of conflict between the two of them and the role of Tibet and, you know, a lot of kind of global things that I don't necessarily think about too much most of the time. And after a while, it struck me, and this was kind of just a conceptual point, but if you think of it as an experiential point, I'm going to use it as just another example of what Sandra is saying here, that you can expand in time. After a while, it struck me that when you think of the situation of the Tibetan people and the Chinese people and their, you know, the interaction and the power that China has over Tibet, when you think of that in the context of developments in the second half of the 20th century, which is basically when China took over Tibet and you know, when communism, when the communist ideology dominated and shaped the direction of China's future. If you see it in that context, things seem very, very stuck and frozen. Although, of course, you can immediately say, well, China's not so very communist right now. What does that mean? You know? But what struck me at that conference after a while was, you know, the 50 years of history that we think of when we think of the relationship between China and Tibet are just a little phase in a relationship that's been going on at least 1,200 years. You know? And that's not to say that it can't have serious consequences, but the moment that you expand the temporality, the temporal dimension, things become more free, more open. Suddenly, you start to think about possibilities that might emerge. So, for instance, one of the things that I was hearing a lot at this meeting was that the Chinese, there's a tremendous interest in Tibetan Buddhism in China right now. Which may have, you know, who knows what consequences that's going to have. But it fits in with a history of relationships between those two countries that has this, you know, this 1,200-year trajectory. And seeing it in those terms, yeah, things open up. So that's kind of an everyday way of thinking about it, but it's definitely related, Sandra, to what you're asking. When you can expand the situation that you're in and expand your own reaction, which is the part that's related to what Hayward was saying, is not quite inherent in your question. When you can do all of that, then there's a possibility for freedom. So, okay. Michael is asking, he says, I feel out of my depth, so to speak, in Bruce's discussion of appearance only. But could we say that Bruce's statement is a statement in appearance only, and that it can't really point to a logically confining commitment to anything else? I'm sort of feeling out of my depth, too. It's just a notion about swimming in space expressed as he swims. Well, that's a nice way of saying it. When you ask the question, is appearance only appearance, to put it that way, It is. It's like, you know, these words kind of bubble to the surface in the middle of our experience, and then we start wondering about how those words relate to the experience, or whether they represent some different level and we have to deal with them in some different way. I think in general, I'm not sure I want to say this as a principle that's good for all time and, you know, in every situation. But logical concerns have their place, but a good way to think about them is this nice phrase that Michael uses, that as you swim, you have an idea about swimming, you know. So that's actually a very nice example, because when you're learning about swimming, you're thinking about your technique, you know, but once you're swimming, you're just swimming. Okay, I'll leave it there. I don't think I can say anything too fruitful beyond that, but I think that that's a nice exchange between Bruce and Michael, so maybe people can go back and look at it. Okay, Sandra is asking, we kind of have two different threads going on here, so that's okay. So Sandra was concerned that the practice might be a defense. In other words, I suppose you mean, Sandra, a way of not really dealing with what's going on. You just say to yourself, if I expand this, if I expand the situation, the emotional situation, does that mean I'm refusing to face up to the reality of what's happening and just trying to see it as a defense? You know, I think that that's a possibility. I think people can use this if you just approach it I was going to say intellectual level, but that's not quite right. You can distance yourself from your experience by saying, well, now I'm expanding it. The expanding somehow has to be a little more real than that. I'm not going to be able to describe that too well, I can see. But I've had that come up. I've noticed over the years that sometimes people are a little too quick to say, well, it's only appearance, or I can expand it, and then, the kind of solidity of it begins to dissipate. There are a couple of different ways of doing that. One way, you are turning away from the situation. So you just have to go back and ask yourself, this is actually a theme that comes up in Buddhism, but I guess I don't really want to go into that. The question is, can you expand something without dismissing the reality of what it is that you're expanding at the level of appearance? In other words, let's try to keep it a little more concrete. If you're in a situation that's very emotional and very tense, and you're practicing expanding that situation, that doesn't mean that you're draining away the emotionality or the tension. In some ways, it might even be that you're making it more real, But, okay, it's hard. I'm just struck by how hard it is to talk about these things. You're making it more real, but only at that appearance level, The very first move you make is to undermine the claim to reality. And that's really the point that we've been coming back to again and again. You don't believe in it, You understand the field communique dimension. You understand that something is being communicated in the field, and that whole way of seeing it undermines that claim. Suppose you came across a scene. You were out walking, and you came across a scene, and somebody was really angry with somebody else, and they were shouting. It looked like they might hit them, and you were concerned about that situation, and then you realized for some reason that these people were only rehearsing a play. They were only taking parts. And all of the tension would dissipate. Everything you'd just seen would have been there. But you realized that nobody was thinking of it as real. Now, when you do that in real life, real life, as we say, there are in fact people who see it as real. You know, so if you're in a situation where you're having a fight with someone, even if you're a serious TSK practitioner, you know, the other per and you are, you know, noticing that this is something that's given by the field communique, let's say, the other person may be seeing it as very real. But their seeing it as real is also a part of the field communique. And if you're good, you know, and that is in the sense if you're kind of have some practice in this, then your experiencing it as real is also part of the communique. And then that undermines your own seeing it as real.
That's when we have our black belt in TSK.
Yeah, I like that. Okay. So now let's go back to what a couple of things that are just this. Let's see, we have a couple of things. So Sandra's saying good. That's good. But let's go back up to what Bruce said in relation to Michael. So this is the appearance. That appearance only is only appearance, right? And Michael is saying, let's go back up. Could we say that Bruce's statement is a statement in appearance only? It can't really point to a logically confining commitment to anything else. It's just a notion that he expresses as he swims. And Bruce says, yes, that makes sense to me. I was just saying that everything is only an appearance. That statement appears to be a performative contradiction if we want the statement itself to be taken as a universal truth, as an actual fact about reality and not just a relative appearance. I'm thinking of the necessity of applying emptiness to itself, lest we reify emptiness or appearance. So I think it's useful to say everything is appearance, but then also to challenge that statement. Okay, well, that's going to be of interest to some people and not for others. I think we've covered it enough. I mean, I think we've said enough about it, that, so I'm not going to say anymore. Okay. You can ignore mine. For this call's purposes. My what? I don't quite understand. Okay. Tsutoba brings up something new, or at least another dimension to that, and to which Bruce has already responded, I'm falling behind. and we're getting toward the end of our time, I think. So Tsutoba says, do you mean we are undermining the only reality that we are entangled with by expanding, by seeing that it is only one of the many realities possible. And so we're not making it unreal, but realizing there are infinite other realities possible. And Bruce said, that's right, that's it. That's why I said you could ignore it. yeah, I would say that's it. That's one step anyway. It's one step you can take. One way to look at this is to say, well, I have my reality, and it's, you know, it's an outcome of a field communique, and I'm ready to vary it. I'm ready to entertain other possibilities. I'm ready to see it as appearance only. Those are all ways of working with the same kind of thing. You don't necessarily want to get hung up on the idea that there are an infinite number of other realities. I mean, that is very helpful, I think, to see that. The only place where I'm hesitant about it is that you aren't necessarily then concluding that, you know, the real reality is that we can move among all these other realities. It really, in the end, there isn't any reality, you know, and even there, you have to be careful. You know, you don't want to say that there's no reality. It's that every reality is the outcome of a field communique. That's what makes it real. And to say that doesn't make it less real.
Every reality is really an appearance.
Yeah, that's right. And that doesn't make it less real. It just makes it an appearance. And the fact that it's just an appearance means that we have a tremendous freedom about what our position or what our response is to it. We're not we're not rejecting it. We're just also not believing it, because every reality comes with its own, cheering section, its own cheerleaders, so reality kind of parades onto the field, and there are these cheerleaders on the side saying, this is reality, this is real, this is, you've got to take this seriously, you've got to take it important, and the cheer is a little bit, more graphic than what I just said, it's somehow more convincing. It's like people are jumping up and down and turning cartwheels and saying, yes, yes, yes. And our job is not necessarily to say no, no, no. Our job is just to say, oh, that's a very interesting presentation, nothing more than that. And we do that not in a way that distances ourselves, but just doesn't get caught up. Okay, I don't know if I can do it any better than that, and I feel like we're a little bit, rehearsing the same theme, but let me look at Michael's comment, and wherever that leads us, that will be the end. Does the field communicate to us as we experience appearance? And is this itself an agent of appearance similar to substance behind appearance? Or is communication of the field somehow the same as appearance in the field? Well, I don't know. How's that for an answer? Should we end there? I think that, there are different ways of formulating this. And you need to find a way that works for you, not in the sense that you can say, now I've got it right, but in the sense that it continues to open. Because that quality of continuing to open into new possibilities, that's really where TSK is meant to lead us. So, okay, that's good. I hope it was useful for you. At some point, we may ask you, I don't think this is the right moment, but at some point, we may try to get some feedback on how this format, which was kind of dictated by necessity, of taking a break for a few weeks and then coming back in this one practice day, if you found that helpful, or doing the practice day, if you found that helpful, because we may try that again. But for now, we're going to stop. I'm going to say thank you. We will start up again in February, and it'll probably have roughly the same structure, but we'll see. And we will go on in February with the remainder of the space section of dynamics in time and space. So you're certainly welcome to be working with that on your own or to be going back over these materials and the course material, because, of course, it's all available online.